Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Rebecca and I am pleased tonight to be joined by Penny, who's here to talk with us a little bit about the practice of being in the monastery garden. So welcome, Penny. Are you there?
Rebecca, can you hear me?
Oh, now I can. Yay, there
okay.
You are.
There I am.
Great. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
So we wanted to talk a little bit about your experience. You're one of the stewards of the monastery garden, work director, if you will, of the garden. And we wanted to, such an exciting time in the garden right now. I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, how that is impacting your practice and what you're seeing about that.
Well, let me talk a little bit about what we're doing in the garden first.
Sure.
You know, we've been in, although we're having a wet winter so far, we've been in 4 years of drought. And so a lot of basically everything we're doing in the garden right now is trying to design the garden to withstand drought or to function as well as it possibly can in drought.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess one of the places where practice is helpful is that practice is about paying attention. And so paying attention to what the possibilities are in the garden has generated some ideas. We don't know yet whether they will work. But last summer, we actually didn't even have a summer garden because we were so concerned about whether we would have enough water for retreats and, you know, and for residents and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of time last summer to just kind of contemplate the garden. And what we've had traditionally are raised beds with wood sides, and we grow, you know, annual vegetables that people are familiar with up on the sort of the middle of the garden. And last year we noticed that actually if you come in the main gate of the garden, from that spot down to the left side of the fence, there's actually about a 6 or 7 foot drop-off over the span of that area. And so, given that water runs downhill, it seemed like a good idea to do whatever we could in that area of the garden to start trying to capture water in a way that would allow it to last beyond rain. And so we've built some structures that are specifically designed to catch water. And there's a couple structures. One is called hugelkultur.
Uh-huh.
And that is either you dig a trench in the ground or you can start from the ground level. We've done it both ways. And you put big chunks of log in and then cover that. And the logs will actually act as a kind of sponge, especially if they're kind of older.
Yeah.
And they will hold, if they get really saturated, they'll hold water for a very long time, for months, in fact.
Yeah.
And so we have a couple of those heading down that hill. And then below that, we're going to dig a swale, which is another way of holding water. It's a trench with debris in it, but a shallower trench. And then we're creating some beds at the bottom of all that hopefully will benefit from all that water that's being slowed down and held and then allowed to, you know, be released slowly downhill as the season wears on.
So let me just reflect some of that, because it's such a brilliant system. And so what we noticed was that there's a decline, a pretty good 6 to 8 foot decline. It's on, you know, it feels flat enough to have a garden, but it actually goes down. And the thinking is if we could put in these hugelkultur things that act as sponges, so it's like the water will run down, fall into these trenches that are filled now with the porous wood, and it'll just hold the moisture for months and months. And then if there's another garden below that, that would benefit even from the swales and the hugelkultur that is in place now.
Right.
Yeah, that is so brilliant.
One thing, well, we'll see if it's brilliant. We don't know yet. but it seems to work with the landscape, and that's what the attempt is. And then the other piece of it is to try to grow more perennial plants, and specifically, I think, in that area. because perennial plants, which is plants that will grow year after year, once they're established, they often require less inputs, including water. And so if you can get some robust growth, I'm hoping this winter and into the spring and even summer we can get some really robust growth, and then often they will, you know, they can pretty much manage themselves with minimal water year after year. So we've planted two artichokes, and we've planted about 30 asparagus.
I can't wait,
And asparagus is a miracle plant. It will grow, it will produce, if it gets established, it'll produce for up to 20 years.
Yes, that is amazing. And not to mention all of the fava beans that are planted to that are nitrogen. I think you say that they're nourish the soil because they replace the nitrogen in the soil.
Well, yeah, not the asparagus, but there are plants you can
plant. No, the fava beans. There's lots of favas that are.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll plant some, what's called cover crop, and most of the cover crops include legumes, and legumes assist plants that grow with them and after them to absorb nitrogen.
Well, and
so, yeah,
the,
I mean, all that is to try to nurture this. You know, it all comes down to soil and water.
Yes. Well, and it all comes down to paying attention, doesn't it?
It does.
Because that's what keeps striking is that, you know, even through the worst of the drought, when there was no summer garden, there was still paying attention and just letting life drop in. Well, what would be kind? What would be kind for the monastery? What would be kind for the earth? You know, and as things drop in, we try it and we look at it and we pivot when we need to. And it's just such a testimony to paying attention.
It is a matter of paying attention, and it's a matter of also getting how totally connected we all are with, and how totally connected water, soil, people, growth, all of that is of a piece. You know, it's part of why I love working in the garden. Because there's really no distinction, actually, between us and the garden. You know, in a way, we're soil and water also.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that is a part of our practice at the monastery, and part of what has made creating these new beds something of a labor, is that because we don't kill things, we have a major gopher influx often in our garden. And so rather than doing anything that would harm them, we have to dig out all these areas and put what's called hardware cloth underneath, which is a wire with half-inch holes. And then so you have to pull all the dirt out and put it aside and then put the hardware cloth in and put the dirt back on it and put the next strip of hardware and the next strip of hardware. And so it is a mighty labor. But you know, you do it because that's how living with this piece of land and these animals is, it works. And so that's what you do.
So that's what we do. Yeah, exactly. It discourages them without harming them. It's really taking the most compassionate for all approach. Same way we do when we cover baby plants so that the deer won't come and eat them. And you know, it's all of a way to really be the most conscious stewards that we can of the land and the resources and the everything that we've been given. And I really do too want to underline and go back to that point that we are all the same. You know, it just underlines the connectedness that we all are. And just getting to, I mean, my experience of getting to work in the garden, there's just no substitute for that, for get down in the dirt and getting your hands and just really being with that which we are one with.
Yeah, that's certainly my experience. And the other thing I would say in terms of how this is so consistent with practice is we don't know what's going to happen. This is a huge experiment. Maybe it'll work and maybe it won't. So to invest this kind of energy and enthusiasm. Without being tied to the result, if it turns out it's not working very well, then you try to sort out what might work instead. So it's just all an unfolding process, and you know, hopefully it'll work, but who knows?
Well, yeah, exactly, and no matter what, we're going to learn something. That,
and
you know,
no matter
we're
going to have fun, you know.
Yeah, we're going to have fun and we're going to learn, right?
Yeah.
It's impossible to make a mistake kind of way. You know, it's like everything informs us.
That's right.
Know, everything.
That's right. Yeah. And the other thing that's been fun for me is that, fortunately, quite a few people have been able to work in the garden. And
mm-hmm.
so there's been a lot of sort of team effort going into it, and I just find that also just so consistent with practice that you know, working together with each other, working together with the land is just immensely satisfying.
Oh, I know. It's one of the most delightful ways of being Sangha.
That's my experience.
Yeah, all of the visiting monks get spend time in the garden. All the residents, you know, spend time in the garden, and it's just one of the joys of getting to be here at the monastery.
Yeah. And you know, there's no that thing about not knowing the result. Like today, another person and I looked at one of the upper beds that just the plants aren't doing well. So we checked for a nasty little problem that we've had before and didn't see that was the problem. So today we transplanted them into another bed. And, you know, again, maybe they'll work and maybe they won't. And I don't know why this bed is not producing. And so, we'll work with that bed and see if we can find a way to live with it that it'll feel better and be healthy and produce things. And in the meantime, we just move on to a different place.
Yeah, and we let drop it in.
Pardon me?
Well, and we let life drop it in. Whatever information is there, it'll drop in when we need it and when it does.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Penny. As one of the beneficiaries of all of the wonderful lettuce and onions and everything and hopefully soon to be asparagus that we grow there, I just a deep debt of gratitude for all of your service to the garden and to the monastery. So thank you so much. And thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Debt of gratitude for the opportunity. So thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Bye-bye.
And before I turn it over to Michael and Sherry, you can stay on the line, Penny, for this wonderful little announcement that the Africa blogs are now live. So we can all, after the show, go check out the first blogs that the team in Africa has posted. So, all right. So thank you. And Michael, I'll turn it over to you and Sherry now.
Okay, great. Thank you, Rebecca. And thank you, Penny. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm crazy. But,
crazy?
You know, with crazy,
that sounds exciting.
It's kind of exciting. Work is kind of crazy, and I think, you know, it's just such a blessing that crazy within the container of practice.
Yes.
Because, you know, it just makes all the difference.
Yeah.
It makes all the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I, when you said that, I had this, I don't know why, but what dropped in was an image of being on a plane with turbulence. And
yes.
You know, we can approach it one of two ways. I mean, maybe there are more, but for most people, it's either this is really scary or wow, this is really exciting. And either way, that plane is going to be jumping around, and either way, whatever is going to happen is going to happen. But we can either be having a good time or a bad time.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
yes, yes. And it was just so great to have a bad meeting and then sit in the car and listen to Open Air on the way home. It was just, you know, it's over. It's done. Whatever happened, and I'm going to drop that and not engage any conversation, and I'm here to come back to the breath and to the moment and to Open Air. So it's all good.
Yes. Yes. In fact, it reminds me that's exactly how there's nothing wrong with you work dropped in for me. It
uh-huh.
was leaving a workshop and having those voices, those brutal, vicious voices come in and just start going from the minute I opened my mouth right through the end of the workshop with everything I did wrong, everything I said that was incorrect, every thought I hadn't finished, every question I hadn't answered, and finally getting to the point of just saying, no, this is not helpful, and I'm not going to do this. And then, of course, the process of, okay, how do we do that? Which is so much what practice is about, right? Learning to direct your attention.
Yeah.
So there's a bad meeting. Yep, that happened. And we're not giving it any more attention because it's time to move on.
Yes, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's we just go to a great big valuable. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly so.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great to hear about the Africa blogs. I actually checked and read that first blog before the show, so that's great.
Yes, yes, and Michael, I'll tell you something exciting for me. I wish I could share this with you. I really, really do, because I know how devoted you are to that work and those blogs.
Uh-huh.
At 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, our time, I am going to be able, everybody keep your fingers crossed, a Skype video visit to the property in Cantalomba.
Wow.
Yeah, and Jen is assembling the troops, right? So all these people that I haven't been able to see for a while are going to be there. I'm going to be able to meet in person or see again, because I probably know most of those girls in the new girls program. I haven't seen them since they were grown-ups. And so get to see Teresa and Veronica and Josephine and baby Sherry, who's now on her way to being a teenager. And so I'm very, very excited about this. And we'll probably hear about it on the blog.
Great. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. That is wonderful. And I have announcements here, unless there's something else you would like to...
No. I'm ready for announcements.
Okay. You and Ashwini will be at East West Bookshop in Seattle, Washington, this Friday, February 5th.
Yes.
Yes, and you will lead a fun and enlightening workshop on the Big Bamboozle.
Yes. We hope it will be both of those things and more.
Great. Great.
Mm-hmm.
And are you looking for a chance to get away from it all and deepen conscious, compassionate awareness in a beautiful and peaceful environment? If so, the practice weekend, February 26th through 28th at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California, is the perfect place for you.
Yes, I happened to be at the last one, and it was a lot of fun.
Great, great.
Yep.
The weekend includes guidance, group, and a practice activity.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't get away right now, but you would like to practice with Sangha, the virtual meditation groups offer a unique way to enjoy the support and connection of meditating regularly with others on this amazing spiritual path.
Mm-hmm. Be supported and be support.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Both sides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These conference call meditation sessions include a 30-minute sit and a reading from Sherry and Ashwini's new book, The Big Bamboozle.
And this is one great way that people can keep up with the year-long going through all of the aspects of The Big Bamboozle, right? So that's how we all stay current.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And for a full schedule of virtual groups and a complete list of practice opportunities, please visit livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make guest show by pressing *6 and then 1. And one topic, please, and 5 minutes. You ready, Sherry?
I'm ready, Michael. Thank you.
Sure. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Till.
Till?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Hi, Till.
Hi, Sharit. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. It took me a second there, but now I hear you loud and clear.
Okay, great.
Oh, I've got a little echo, though. I don't know if Michael hears that echo, but... Yeah. What's going on, Till?
Is this better?
Well, talk a little bit more.
How about this?
Perfect.
Okay, great. So now it's just
beautiful.
A regular phone. Okay, great. Yeah. So I got a question.
Okay.
Okay, and I signed up for the email class with the Socratic method.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have to pick our own theme.
Yes.
Yeah, and the question is basically, I don't know what to pick for a theme. So how to go about that.
Okay. And so when you consider where you are in practice right now, are there kind of themes that you see? So another way, Till, to ask that question would be, do you find yourself in repeating conversations in your head on particular aspects of your life?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Mm-hmm. And does one of those stand out more than the others?
I think there are two kind of, like, content-wise, I would say there are maybe two that kind of stand out.
Okay. And can you see when you look at those two areas of your life and the content, do you see similarities? In other words, if I were to say, I'm going to look at, I would see similarities between relationships in my life and work, that I find myself in a lot of conversations about those two things. And then if I answered that question that I just asked you, I might come up with something like, I hear... I'm in a conversation often about how they should be different or it should be different. Or maybe I see that I'm in a conversation about how I should be different, that if I did something else, then this wouldn't be this way. Any kind of similarities
mm-hmm.
like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, very. I mean, I can, like, content... So would be one is like work and like overwhelm or stress or afraid of making mistakes in work. And then another one that comes usually up only when nothing else is wrong, then it's about me being so far away from my family. And I think then, like, the underlying or the similarity in the message of both of those is that I'm somehow doing doing the wrong thing with my life, kind of like that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Till. So we just kind of did a little abbreviated version of what I'm hoping that class will be like.
Hmm.
Where we can take a specific issue, we would say a karmic issue, right, a practice issue, and we'll begin to, together, to just start drilling down. So it's kind of, and what's behind that? And what's behind that? And where does, and what does, and, okay? So I will be asking you questions that I hope will encourage you to look in ways and in places that you haven't before, that will enable you to step back a little more and see something with an additional clarity that will give you a new way of relating to it.
Yeah, that's great. I'm really looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I don't know if you, you know, if you're going to want to continue with what we were looking at, or maybe over the next few days until the class starts, you'll be looking at this and it'll take you to another place and you'll get to that. Okay, well, now what I'm seeing is, so, because that's the way the class is laid out, right? You're going to, you and everybody else in the class, I hope, you'll describe where you are and what you're seeing, what you're experiencing right now about what it is that you're looking at. And then I'm going to point you to another place. So then you're going to go over there and look at that thing that I'm encouraging you to look at, so that by the time the class is over, you will have had a pretty close to a 360-degree look at this karma, and you'll be in a completely different relationship with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds awesome. And also what was coming up was kind of like that, because what I noticed with the whole question, what theme should I pick, was that, like, there's a lot of conversation about that, and it's like I have to pick the right thing. But what was coming up now is basically it doesn't really matter, because I just start with something, and then it might lead to, I don't know, unexpected places anyway.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And your point, Till, is really a good one. I mean, when we actually get the hang of awareness practice, we could look at anything, and we would, before long, see our karma, see our whole process that is operating in our lives, because it's operating everywhere all the time with everything, right? We just get fooled because we're conditioned, we're trained to look at content. So that's what, when I say, so if you were to look at something and see, excuse me, does it show up in different places in your life? Oh, yeah, it shows up there and there and there and there and there. But it takes us a long time to catch on to that, because in conditioned mind, there are compartments, right? So when I'm in my relationship compartment, then I'm only looking at that. And when I'm in my work compartment, I'm only looking at that. And so the stories applied to that specific content seemed really different, right? And then we start going underneath that and underneath that and underneath that. We begin to see, but I'm bringing the same thing to it. And then, of course, once we do that part, the less people think, oh, well, that's great. Then I will have seen that. Okay, I'm done. We need to do the class. Because then we want to look at, well, how do we change our relationship with that? Right? So just seeing it, awareness is not change. So we can you know, the change in behavior solidifies the change in consciousness. Ooh, solidified consciousness. That doesn't sound very good, but you know what I mean. I can have an awareness of something, but if I keep being and doing the same thing, nothing is going to be different in my life. So, so there are lots of steps with it.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
All right. Well, I won't know who you are, of course, but I look forward to seeing you online if we don't talk before.
Okay.
Thank you, Jill.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jill. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, hi, it's Anna from Yorkshire in England.
Well, hello, how are you?
Hello, oh, I'm really good. I'm so happy to get on. I've been ringing, but your lines are very busy, so I'm so happy.
Oh, and are you on a break? Are you on a break, or are you just...
No, I'm just determined. I'm not on a break. I'm just...
You're braving a day without having had enough sleep.
I am, yeah. It's a bit easier as well. Actually, my husband he's over in your direction, which is like... He's not actually in your direction, but... He's in South America. He's in Bolivia on an arts project. So yeah, that's great. But so I've kind of got the house to myself, which means I'm not disturbing other people that have to get up in the morning as well. So,
uh-huh.
And I'm just had enough, and I'm just trying it. So I've got on and so happy. And also, I'm using the landlines. I've been using the app, and I thought I'll use the landline for good luck, see if that works. So,
oh, yes. Lovely. Good.
And just to say, I've been doing the virtual meditation groups, and I love it so much. I'm so happy. It just makes me feel really, really good. Really enjoying it. And of course, the Bamboozle book, which I got as a Christmas present, and started it and then stopped. So I'm looking forward to this year.
I can't go ahead. Right. That's very honorable. Mm-hmm.
But I had a practice, so it was a practice period. So yeah, so really enjoying it. I have been ringing you previously to give you a catch up with the chocolate and all of that, which has been really fun. But something happened recently that I wanted to talk to you about that has been quite interesting, and that I've been looking at, if that's okay. A short while ago. So I'm somebody that, and in quotes, doesn't get angry. And people who know me, if you ask them, they'd say, "Oh yeah, Anna knows, she never gets angry." And a couple of weeks ago, I got angry, and again, that's in quotes, because I completely understand that that anger isn't just anger, and that it is other stuff, and it manifests in different ways. But I got, you know, sort of stereotypically angry and shouted and things like that to a complete stranger that I don't know. So I was really shocked and surprised by that, and so I started looking at it as well. And that was what I just thought I'd talk to you about.
What have you seen as you explored it?
Well, first of all, I went to my Sherry Hooban Living Compassion collection and looked for the anger book, and I was like, oh no, there isn't one.
I know, it's such a mistake.
So I went to the Fear book. Yeah, yeah.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
So the next one was, and I was thinking in my memory, and I was thinking, oh, maybe I think that might be in the Fear book. So I got the Fear book, and of course, and it is in there, and I read all of the Fear book, and I've put lots of it into my recorder, and I've done recording and listening around it. And there were a couple of descriptions in the fear book that sort of say things that can be underlying. In other words, were, of course, anger, but then irritation and urgency and control issues. And those are sort of three words that I could see that I do that. That is what I do. So those are just sort of other I just sort of do that instead of sort of getting, angry, as you know, in another viewpoint, if you see what I mean. And so I was thinking also, I'm just sort of controlling myself and not letting myself get angry because it doesn't work, and things just get worse, and things like that. And so I looked a bit further, and from what I could see, and it's really incredible, and it was what you were just talking about just now with the previous caller, because what had happened was just the content. It's nothing really. It was just that I was tired, and I had a little bit of a sore throat coming on, and it was the end of the day, and it was dark, and it was raining. It was just raining and raining, and I was blocked in the car park at work. And I just wanted to go home. I was locked in by this unknown vehicle, didn't know anything about it. And by the time this person came out, I was like, you know, I'm really not happy that you blocked me in. I don't think it's on, all this kind of stuff that I never say normally. And she didn't respond. The other person didn't respond in a way that made any sense to me at all. And the situation just got ridiculous. And so I looked at that, and then and what I thought I could see underneath that was that I was going to be late for being on the ring road, and it would get really, really busy, and that's when I feel unsafe. So it wasn't her, and it wasn't really this situation. It was just that I was going to be on the ring road at the wrong time, and just this word unsafe kept coming up. And that was the word that came up with the addiction thing. I don't know whether you remember. So
tea and chocolate.
So, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it was when I sit down and have a cup of tea and eat my chocolate, I feel safe, and that I'm on a little island and nothing can get to me. I'm fine. So yeah, so like you've just been saying, so I've not been looking at this for very long, and I started to look at when I just do little small irritations, like I might snap, to me I can see that I'm doing it. Nobody else would see it because it's just how people are, if you see what I mean, in the world. So nobody sees it, but I've been noticing it. And
you're aware of it.
And it's fun, and it's really interesting. I'm really, having a good time. And so just the final thing that I'm just beginning to look at, and I'm not seeing it, so I'm just going to keep at it, and it will come. Is in the fear book, you've got sensations, thoughts, emotions, beliefs. So that's my focus, particularly when I'm at work, because that's when it's harder. And just that first one at the moment, sensations. So I haven't got very far with that yet. So I'm quite excited about it, and I don't really understand very much about it, but.
So can I ask you about a piece of it?
Yes.
So what you mentioned, control, and I think it's in the context of that,
yes,
one of the elements that was mentioned in the fear book. And is that an issue for you? I mean,
well,
it sounds like you're fairly controlled so that you don't get emotional and act out and that sort of thing. But would you say you're controlling in the sense that you like things to be a certain way, or you does
well,
that show up in your life at all?
I mean not obviously. I mean, this is again another thing, if you were to ask somebody else they would say no, but I think that I do it in that I think it's really, really subtle. I'm not controlling of other people as such, I'm controlling of my environment. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Well, because so, what struck me with that the story of the woman in the car park is that
yeah.
you were really out of control.
Yeah.
You
okay.
had no control. This person was controlling you and
yeah.
putting you in a position that in and of itself felt unsafe. I mean, she could have
yeah.
been gone for an hour. You had no
yeah.
idea, right, when she
yeah.
was going to come and move that car.
Yeah.
And so, that that brings up a lot of emotion for most of us.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
just
yeah.
the, I have no ability to control my circumstances. I'm impotent. There's nothing I can do about this. And then, of course, as you notice, the fear that arises. And there can be a specific that goes with it. You know, I won't get on the ring road in time and it'll be really busy and that's scary. But
yeah.
I would say even that's a story that matches, what was going on with you. But on the deepest level, it's just the fear that we feel when we realize we have no ability to affect our circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the emotion for a lot of people that comes out is what we call anger. But it's
yeah.
just it's a cocktail of emotional reactions to feeling vulnerable and helpless,
yeah.
impotent,
yeah.
and
yeah.
So I just thought that might be another place to look.
One of the things about, I think that, I mean, that was the first, out of those, the words that were in the fear book that were other words for fear, it was the
mm-hmm.
control, it was the control one. And and it just makes sense, just very, very briefly, sort of as I was growing up, my stepdad was, he was a very violent person, really, really violent. He was an alcoholic. And I can remember, even now, trying to control my environment so that I was safe. And I did that 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, I was going to say something else about that. It's gone. Oh, yeah. And I couldn't. And because he was such an angry person, I couldn't express obviously how I was feeling. And if I, if I could have said to him, "Excuse me, what you're doing is really out of order, mate, stop it," he'd have got really,
mm-hmm.
really, really angry. So
mm-hmm.
I can see all of that. I've come a long, long, really, such a long way since then. But. It's so interesting. It's just really interesting. At first, I was really upset about this whole thing that happened. I was like, oh, God, this is terrible. What have I done? And then really, quite soon, within 48 hours, I was like, this is really good. This is really
right.
good because it's showing me. It's really showing me this stuff that I'm going to have to face at some point. It's going to,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because all of that emotion goes somewhere, doesn't it? And what we usually realize pretty quickly is anything that I'm stuffing is winding up in my body, and it's going to be doing something to it. So,
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I suspect that we're so heavily conditioned, especially as females, not to express any powerful emotion, right?
Yeah.
We can be weak, we can cry, we can, ask for mercy, but to stand up and be angry and demanding and outspoken, there are a lot of words to describe women like that, and none of them
mm-hmm.
are friendly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
I think part of the, what we have to face when that starts happening. In the same way, on the other side, if we're going to be terribly stereotypical, if that's a form of that we can use here, for men, they have to go through
mm-hmm.
a lot often to be able to express the other emotions, the sadness and sorrow or despair or hopelessness or defeat or those kinds of emotions are really not acceptable for a male person. And yet, if we're going to be okay, we all have to be able to feel everything that we feel and be all right with that. And part of the way we get there is by what's called, in quotes, acting out. So
right.
you get to
yeah.
yell at a stranger and then
yeah.
watch.
yeah.
Everything you believe about that, everything you've been taught, all the fears, all the anxiety, all the feeling bad, the everything that goes with it, we go, oh, well, no wonder I don't do that more often.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remembered why. That I did exactly that. It's like, oh, I remembered why I don't get angry. It's awful. But then I got to,
yes.
actually, no, that was really good. It was really good because lots of things came up. So.
Yes, yes. And for somebody like me, where I grew up in a violent family, but everybody was violent except my mother. So violence was the norm. It was really acceptable. So, you know, you could
yeah.
scream and yell and throw things and cuss and carry on. And everybody was fine with it.
Right.
So
right.
I missed out on that conditioning. So when you know, an angry reaction for me is just, yeah, okay, well, whatever.
Right.
But
yeah.
the other kinds of emotions, not so easy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're all finding center, aren't we?
Yeah.
With however
yeah.
we've been conditioned. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And
all right.
So when you were talking about expressing it, and so I've been doing that with the mentor every morning. So
yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. The two-handed recording is great for that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
you can just
blah, yeah.
blah, 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 and this and that and use
yeah.
those four-letter words, and the mentor doesn't care. The mentor just said, mm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, and just one brief thing before I go. The running, I've still been doing it, and it was 6 months just this week. So, yes.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Good for you.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Really, really
oh,
wonderful
you are so
to
welcome.
You.
Thanks.
And
thanks
you
for getting
Michael,
up and being
ever.
With us.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thank you. Okay.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anna, in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Brave soul.
Yes. Yes. And Sherry, for my ads, I'm having technical challenges here. So if you want, we can either do a silence break for a minute, or we can just go on to the next question.
Oh, let's just go on ahead. Yeah,
okay.
Let's just go on ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
Give us an extra minute.
Perfect. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Todd.
Well, hello,
hey,
Todd.
Hi.
Are you home?
You know, I phoned in. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so,
good.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The past 6 months, I called every Tuesday night and put myself in the queue, and I never got called on. And the last four times I've called in, I just put myself in the queue just to get that, you know, adrenaline rush. And I get called on four times in a row. Wow.
just so that we, it's clear to us that we have no idea.
Clear to us, we have no idea. I'm going to say a quick thing, and then I'm going to sign off and let other folks get on. But I want to say how much I enjoyed that discussion about the gardening with Penny and Rebecca.
Yes, because you got a little chance to be in there, didn't you?
Eight working meditation sessions in the garden. And, you know, it rained a lot while I was there. It rained a lot.
I know.
It didn't
We're
rain
so happy
once
about that.
One. I know. It didn't rain once during a working meditation in the garden. Now think how amazing that is.
Wow. That
yeah.
is astounding.
It's astounding. It almost rained every night and every day off and on for the month I was there. But the eight gardening working meditations, it never rained.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
In fact, it was sunny.
Our garden is being is receiving extra blessings.
It is, and it's being transformed mm-hmm. just as we are while we're working in it.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, Todd. Would you recommend coming to the monastery for a month to other people?
Wow. I would highly, highly recommend it. It it is a so difficult to put in words, but if I could, I would say it's the opportunity to deepen practice at a level that no other experience I have ever had in practice can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I
all right, just checking.
Okay, it was a phenomenal experience. I saw a lot of stuff.
That's great. And as awareness practitioners, that's what we realize is the point, right? We want always to be putting ourselves in places where we see a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw conditioning had no place to hide, so it all came up.
Mm-hmm.
And it
loses a bunch of power, doesn't it? It loses power at a dramatic rate. When it comes up and we see it for what it is and it has no ability to do to us what it habitually has done to us.
Right. Because we are held in that privileged environment in a monastic structure of schedule and loving kindness, compassion, and all those other things that it just, you're right. By week three, it loses so much power that in week one, you think you're not going to make it through.
Mm-hmm.
And in week three, you're like, that story I'm not interested in anymore, and that story I'm not interested in anymore, and that conversation I don't care about because I've seen it 100 times, and it's so redundant mm-hmm. and repetitive and boring. And like mm-hmm. you said, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything by week three-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you just get stronger and stronger, and conditioning gets weaker and weaker, and even though when we go back into regular life, some of that fades, it's true, but we never go back to being the person that we were before, because we are, in fact, forever changed.
Yeah, that is mm-hmm. my experience. You're right. I mean, certainly without having that continuous support and structure of the monastery, yes, I agree, things do fade, but for sure I will never be the same person I was when I arrived there at the beginning of January.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I am deeply grateful and just want to express my gratitude, and I'm going to say good night and let someone else come on.
All right. Thank you, Todd. Glad you're home safe and sound.
Safe and sound. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Todd, on Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Michael and Sherry. It's Jeff in North Carolina.
Well, hello, hi. Jeff. How are you doing? Good. What's going on?
Well, I'm interested in this the whole conversation around control that I was hearing a little bit ago, and I had no idea that I might talk about that tonight. In fact, I really have hardly looked at the idea of control issues at all, and I can't even remember if I've looked at it at all in practice. And it's kind of amazing because, you know, as I listen to you.
Whoops.
Do you like things to be a certain way? I was like, oh.
oh, is that part of it?
So I don't even really know where to start with all that, except that I look at a lot of things and being a teacher, because I think it shows, working with children shows. It's a great spiritual practice because, you know, children react, for one thing, they react so much more honestly, a lot of times than adults do. And the reaction is, it's clear what's going on. So, besides just, you know, children don't act in all the regular conditioned ways that adults do. So, they're challenging my conditioning a lot more. But anyway, yeah, all that stuff about being like wanting things to be a certain way, whether it's at home or at work or wherever. I think that'll be a really interesting place for me to look.
Yeah, because the way we talk about it, of course, is that people have no idea how controlled people are. Mm. So somebody, you know, if somebody has a lot of control issues, she's really controlling. And then there's the impression that, and I'm not, okay, so that's a good thing. So we don't have to really look at control anymore. And what that sets up is an inability to be aware of how egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, is controlling us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
What you like, what you don't like, how you want it, how you don't want it, what's important to you, what's beautiful, what's good, what's bad, what's right, what's wrong, how you should spend your time, how you should feel about that. It's all orchestrated. And we believe that it's us making those decisions. And, of course,
right,
when we really begin to get a sense of how pervasive it is when we decide to do something that karmic conditioning doesn't want us to do. We're going to make a different choice than ego wants us to make. And then it, as they say, hits the fan. And we can see pretty clearly that, wow, okay, this is upsetting. If we're paying close attention, we get to see, but it's not upsetting to me because I'm the one that made the choice. So, wow, that's what's meant by ego throwing a fit when the human being wants to go off in an independent direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, another aspect of it that I'm looking at is one of the things I have been looking at for years is this idea that I don't have enough time, and mm-hmm. It occurs to me. The idea of perfectionism has certainly occurred to me as one of the things that contributes to that experience of not having enough time. But I haven't looked at it through the lens of control. Just the liking it, things to be a certain way. For instance, today I the particulars don't really matter, but in this particular situation, the way I was going to go about doing things would have involved a lot more of my time because I wanted it to, and I wasn't even conscious that I, in quotes, wanted it to be a certain way and that I had ideas about how it should happen and da-da-da-da-da. My co-teacher sent out an email that it was taken care of. And I went, oh. it's been suggested to me before by someone who knows me well, that there are times in which I go up. He didn't say there are times in which he I can remember, but basically I very often do things in the way that takes the greatest amount of time, and I'm not even, you know, although I've looked at that idea kind of as let me think about it in a different way. I don't know that I've really looked at that through a practice lens, in the sense of how does that process happen? You know, how is it that because like today, as I said, I wasn't even aware that I was going about doing things in a way that was controlling, that you could say, because I wanted it to be a certain way. I wanted to control the result and make sure it turned out well. Go ahead.
What you're suspecting? Well, what you're really seeing is that without your awareness, conditioning, ego, was controlling you to do things in a way that would take the maximum amount of time. Now, the reason it's doing that is because, well, I want it to be done well. I want it to be right, because otherwise there is no justification for doing something that just takes a long time, right? The ego is not going to say, well, actually, I want you to do it this way because it'll take a bunch of time. And then when I say, you don't have enough time, you're going to believe me because, look, you're constantly out of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and the language you use is almost exactly the language that I hear in my head. If there are words, which most of the time they're not, that, you know, most of the time it's just on this unconscious, just, you know, kind of go being driven around level. But when I do put words to it, it is often something like, I want it to be so good, you know,
yeah.
or it could be, I want it to be done right, or I want it to be done really well, or whatever, something along those lines. And there's, yeah.
And without conscious awareness being brought to it, the assumption is for things to be done right or really well takes a long time, which is not necessarily true. Right?
Wow. Well, you know, it's really interesting because as I start to look at that, you know, there are two things that come up. One is the belief that I'm pretty sure is the karmically conditioned belief, which says, oh, but yes, it does, and you know. And then the other is looking to my experience, which says, well, no, that's often not the case. There are certainly times when I just show up, you know, without a plan, and it goes great. And
yeah.
I mean, that's all over the place that kind of thing happens. And there are times when I have, you know, a great plan and it just doesn't go anywhere.
Yes, and if I may underline that, okay, you have hit on the exact point. Because what all of that, I want it to go really well, I have to plan it out, it takes a lot of time. What that does is make sure you're looking to conditioned mind instead of just showing up and letting life do it beautifully.
Oh.
So there's nothing accidental about this. And you've had the experience. You just articulated both experiences, and you've put your finger on why conditioned mind works so hard to get you to believe that it takes all of this thinking about it and working on it and looking at it, figuring it out, and making it happen, just to be sure you're not going to be present for life to unfold it beautifully.
Wow. I can feel it. You're talking about this. I can feel the, in quotes, person inside who, I don't know if that's a person, but and I kind of suspect it's not, who is so invested in that control and is you know, is afraid of letting go of that control. And
you know it's ego.
Know.
Yep, because only ego is afraid, so we nailed it.
Yep, and another just big clue, is even not a strong enough word, is and one of the big fears is loss of identity. There's no identity without that. There is no me.
Except if you want an identity as the guy who is so relaxed and so casual and so on the money every time. You could step into that identity.
This is so funny because it goes so against the conditioning. Because it's like that according to the conditioned story, that isn't a good person. You know? That is
Yeah. Yeah, people like the Buddha.
Person, you have to work
like
hard.
Them? Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah. You have to effort. You have to live in angst and stress and tension and
even if you
and
fail.
And yet your experience is very often you put yourself through that and it doesn't go well at all, And on the other hand, you just show up and it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean, you know, the just showing up is not unconscious by any means. It's practicing showing up fully present, open and available to life to just deliver the best that there is through you.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it's practicing rather than controlling, or practicing
That's
rather
right.
than attempting to control.
That's right. That's
Being
right.
In the moment.
And the beauty of it is for us practitioners, in the clamp down in a knot, it's all about me. I'm successful. I did it. I did a good job. I made it perfect. In the just show up and let life live me, there's no credit because there's no me. It's just all credit goes to life who did this amazing thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, boy. Well, thank you, Sherry. This is going to be a really, really fun one to get on the recorder. Thank you.
Buckle your seatbelt.
All right. That's
it's going to be an exciting ride.
Yeah, truly. Yeah, very exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Oh,
very
absolutely.
Fun.
Yeah.
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 All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jeff. Sherry, we got about 4 minutes left. Would you like to talk with another caller?
Oh, let's try it.
All righty. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry. This is Christina.
Well, hello, Christina. How are
Hi.
You?
Great. I'm so glad I got on. I'll be quick. I'm doing great. And I, you know, my practice, one of my practice guidelines for the year is that I do what I say I'm going to do. And it has been, it's been a month, not quite a month, and it's just been a really powerful thing to practice with because mostly because what I'm getting to see with that is that I, for the most part, I'm so privileged that I choose almost everything on my daily, it's really everything on my daily list. And I've watched over the years how I get talked into a belief that I don't really want to do those things, or it's hard, or just not under these circumstances, or not, you know, in this way. And what I'm opening up to is just when I get past, well, you know, so the story leads to resistance, and then I'm stuck in this resistance, which is never any fun. And then, you know, whether it builds up through procrastination or just having a bad attitude or whatever it is, it's not any fun to do those things that I say I'm going to do. And
Oh, that's so big, isn't it? That is so big.
It really is. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm right there with you.
So if I just do it, you know, if I just cut through all of it and I just do it, I'm all of a sudden back in that place of, gosh, I chose this. I really want to be doing this. This is so much fun. And then I'm seeing all of the incredible things that pour out from that, from life, you know, from life itself. And I get to experience all of it, which was totally unavailable to me when I was caught up in the story or living out resistance or, you know, or whatever it is. And it's been really cool.
You know, I hope people listening to this will really listen to it. Because what you have articulated is exactly how people who are incredibly privileged, which just about everybody listening to this program is, okay, how people who are incredibly privileged are made miserable in incredibly privileged lives. You identified perfectly how it happens. So there, everything in your life you do because you want to do it. It's in your life, right? You've chosen this, right? And you have the ability to choose this, right? So, and then the story starts, the resistance starts simply to make you unhappy in a life that you have chosen.
Yep.
That's it. That's all that's going on. It's so simple and straightforward. It is hidden in plain sight, isn't it?
Yep.
Because, as you say, without that conversation, without that resistance, you would get up every day and you would just dance through your life doing thing after thing after thing after thing that is for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's big to see, to accept that it's all for me, too. I mean, that's kind of the place I'm at right now of, whoa, and then... You know, I can see the story coming at me now is it's all going to end, you know. You can't just always live like this. And so I get to, you know, I get to prove that wrong now, too.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so amazing. It's like, you know, I don't want to have to put my clothes that I went to the store and bought because I liked them and wanted them. I don't want to have to put them in my washing machine and wash them. And then I don't want to have to put them in my dryer. And then I don't want to have to get them out and fold them up and hang them up and put them away. I'm so burdened. And after that, you know, I'm going to have to go to my computer that I picked out because it's the one I want. And I'm going to have to do work on it that I choose to do. And after that, I'm going to have to go to the grocery store and buy food for myself to eat. And that's the kind of thing that people can get stuck in listening to a conversation that causes them to be unhappy with those kinds of life situations. Not I get to work and I get paid for it. And I can buy food, and I can fix it, and I, you know, all of those things that are in my life exactly, really pretty close to exactly the way I want them. Without that story, I'm in bliss.
Yep. Well, thank you for practice, Sherry, and for recording and listening. It's a huge gift. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you for doing it.
Yeah, my
you
pleasure.
Know, a lot of people aren't, Christina. A lot of people aren't.
Yeah.
And we can only hope that more will, because it truly is the way out of the dark room, into the light room, out of suffering, into freedom. And gosh, don't we want that for the whole world?
Yes, yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Talk
Good
to
night.
You soon, I bet. Good
yes,
night.
I bet. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Christina. And thank you, Sherry, for being here tonight. It was a fabulous show.
Thank you, Michael. So appreciate it. I always appreciate it. Many thanks.
Great.
Week after week after week. And see you next week, huh?
Okay.
Good Lord willing. All right. Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.